Hello, and this is Jeremy Schwartz of Saving Tomorrow's Planet, the podcast that travels the world hunting down and finding incredible, inspiring people who are taking action to actually save the planet. And today we've got the most inspiring woman, Zara Carbonell, the CEO and co-founder of Magwali, which is a fantastic cosmetic product, both a sun care product and shampoo. Well, I'm not going to spoil the story because we need to hear it from her, but listen to the inspiration of somebody who's really taking action to protect the planet in the most natural, wonderful way. And over to her.
I am the co-founder of Magwali. It's a sustainable personal care brand that's based in the Philippines. And we're known for our products, the Reef Safe Sunscreen and also the plastic-free shampoo bar.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, do you obviously have a story as to how you created this business and something that led up to you caring about sustainability? Could you perhaps take us back in the journey to tell us what got you into being interested in this in the beginning?
Okay, so my story is a bit dramatic. It started 15 years ago. There was a big typhoon that hit directly Manila. It was Typhoon Ondoy. And because of that, there were floods all around. I was with my family, with my parents and sister at that time. And our house got flooded up to the waist. And although we experienced floods before, this was like the worst. And it really made a mark on me. And, you know, it was such a horrible experience for me and the family because we didn't know if we had to evacuate and all of that. But I think the good thing that happened there was it sparked that curiosity for me on climate change.
Yeah.
So it's when I started being curious about how humans are impacting the environment and how the environment in turn impacts the humans back. And that's when I started like signing up for free Coursera courses on climate change and energy and waste management. And even if it's totally like different from what I did, because at that time I was in corporate advertising.
Oh,
so
right.
It's a totally like other side of the coin, like consumerist aspect. So yeah, that's when how the sustainability awakening happened for me.
Now, listen, one of the things that I talk about a lot, because I've traveled the world through business, is actually that populations in the Philippines, in India, in China, are actually maybe much more aware of the sustainability and climate crisis than those perhaps in England, where, frankly, the weather is pretty benign and we can't see very much. How would you respond to that thought, just listening to your story?
Right. You know, that's very interesting because there is a data point that shows that exactly. So you might be aware of Google Trends or Google Explorer, and wherein you can know the level of search volume of a particular search keyword in Google. So for example, the keyword is climate change. So this is very interesting because I just did this one day and typed climate change and compared Philippines with other Western countries that have a higher population. And I saw that the search volume in the Philippines was a lot higher for climate change. And it's just so interesting because I had this personal story, but also I see it in terms of like quant data, that it's reflected, like there's really more curiosity in places wherein we directly experience these wild weather changes.
Do you know why I love doing this podcast? Because every single time I speak to somebody, you know, I learn something that is profound. And what you've just said is so profound because it's so obvious. I have never literally thought about doing a Google search word tracking for this subject by country to see the facts to support this statement. So, you know, that is brilliant, but I'm literally going to do it straight after this and use that. And so what you're saying is spot on. Now, just tell us what it's like for a couple of, you know, to be flooded because of a typhoon and such a thing, because it's so hard to imagine what goes on over the next weeks and so on. How do you recover?
Actually, you know, you think that it's quite shocking, But for our perspective, it's quite normal. If you talk to a regular Filipino, like a regular middle class or, you know, like the regular Filipino with no high income, it's likely that they've experienced floods, especially if they live in the city. And it's because of, it's a combination of many things, like bad waste management, bad drainage system, and of course, climate change, because the weather or the typhoons are getting stronger and stronger. So it's actually not that like shocking, because it has become quite normal, unfortunately. And me myself, I've experienced it a couple of times already, and maybe that's the reason also like why we moved to a different place with less floods. And even when you're looking for a place, the number one thing that you'd ask is like, is there floods here? Because it's quite normal, unfortunately.
No, it's true. I mean, I'm fully aware that you have a lot of typhoons and it's a regular occurrence, but nonetheless being flooded. So, and you've just raised something interesting, because I was just going to wonder, where were you living and where are you living, and is it, you know, drier? So perhaps just explain that.
Yes. Right. Well, I guess like I've also tried to, you know, how do I say this? Like, I've also evolved in terms of my career.
Right.
So that's why I've had these choices that I can, better choices that I can make. So I am very privileged not to live in a, to have a choice to not to live in a place where there's flooding anymore.
Yeah, I understand. Right. So you had this traumatic experience. You suddenly understood about the environment. What were the steps that then led you to say, I'm interested in coral and I'm interested in that damage and I've got a product in mind?
Right. So that's true. It's not definitely an overnight change. And for the next years, I'm just like an avid reader of sustainability related articles and like getting certified in Coursera. But on the other hand, in the advertising world, I was also taught about how brands have this power of changing the minds of consumers, changing their behavior. And I just connected, like, if in through marketing, we can change the minds and behaviors of consumers, why can't we do that for the better? Like, for changing the consumers in choosing products that are better for the planet. And it just so happened also more than 7 years ago, I came across this article about how sunscreens are toxic to coral reefs. And, you know, as a Filipino, the beaches are so near us. And so I went looking for a reef safe sunscreen because there was an upcoming beach trip.
Right.
However, I couldn't find a reef safe sunscreen in Manila.
Wow.
Which was unfortunate, because in the Philippines, we have really good marine ecosystem because we're part of the coral triangle.
Yes.
And that's why we're called the Amazon of the seas. But we don't have the reef safe sunscreen. So it just so happened also that my colleague in advertising knew about the issue. And we just decided that, okay, let's just start creating, developing our local reef safe sunscreen and make it more accessible to Filipinos and tourists in the Philippines, even if we don't have background product development, but we had our marketing expertise.
That's obviously very clear. So let's get into the science, because actually, again, in this podcast, I always like to get into the science of everything, because that's where the truth is, and then you're not just flipping along. So with modern, because I think this is particularly, with my experience, a problem of modern sunscreens, I suspect. Do you want to give us a sort of summary of what's going on chemically in the modern sunscreen and how that can damage the coral?
Right. So traditional or chemical-based sunscreens, they have active ingredients such as oxybenzone or octinoxate, which are very toxic to corals in low concentration. So what happens is the corals, they are in a symbiotic relationship with the zooxanthellae. They're like the algae.
Yeah.
And then when they get in contact with the bad chemicals, the corals get stressed out and they expel the algae.
Right.
And because of that, that's when the coral bleaching starts. So maybe also, before I forget, like one big asterisk is that there are a lot of conversations now how sunscreens are causing coral bleaching, but actually the biggest cause of coral bleaching is still climate change.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, it's going to be a bit challenging. Yeah. I could be considering what is the concentration of sunscreen that enters the water from the skin, from people swimming, and is of such a level that when it hits the coral, it's, you know, it's of a concentration sufficient to create damage. And if I was being a bit cynical here, I could question that versus, as you say, the raising of temperature and how that is bleaching the coral. But nonetheless, you don't want to be putting anything in, particularly in beaches, lots of people. So yes, carry on then.
I think that's a good point, because I think, of course, we know that it's climate change, and even other things like blast fishing or dynamite fishing, which is still quite common here in the Philippines. So even if we have those things, if we know that our sunscreen is damaging the coral, so of course we don't want to contribute to that. But we need to have that consciousness that there's a bigger problem and there's a bigger lifestyle change that we need to do apart from like switching to our reef-safe sunscreen.
I must say, the other thing, of course, that through your interest and your focus on this, I mean, I'm reading that in Australia, I think in other places, they are discovering ways to replant and to reforest, if we want to say that, corals. So there does seem to be, you know, opportunities, and perhaps because of your interest, you know, that raises the interest in the Philippines to consider that perhaps as well. I don't know if that's the case.
Right. For sure. I think there are a lot of organizations now that are also doing those reef repair. So I think that's very noble of a job. So I think it's also interesting because different organizations also contribute to the whole impact ecosystem in a different way. Like we could have this reef safe sunscreen, but definitely we need to have those organizations as well, which take care of the reefs.
Yeah. Now, coming back to sunscreen, because by the way, having read everything on your website, I definitely would want to use reef safe. It's the gesture and the act would feel good for me. And obviously we know, and as you're in marketing and advertising, you know, one of the questions is how do we get consumers to switch to products? And part of it is that they feel a personal benefit or value system makes them embrace that thought as a gesture of good. And if there's not a compromise in quality, particularly. Now, having read, so tell me about the ingredients you've used, because there's lots of little scientific elements that you've explained that are important to end up with a product such as yours that both protects the skin, which obviously is a critical thing to avoid cancer, so, but also protects the reef.
Right. So our formulation, our mantra with formulating anything in Maguay is to keep it as simple as possible.
Yes, true.
So part of that is the absence of the bad chemical ingredients that are toxic to the coral reefs.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we also are in this mission of ensuring that people love using sustainable products. Yeah. So that includes not just our sunscreen, but our shampoo. Like, you know, it's also ensuring that the product experience is great for our shampoo, for example, making sure that it lathers well, that it's pH balanced, that it doesn't dry the skin, and it's great to use. It's something that you want to use, even if it's not sustainable, because we also believe that at the end of the day, it's also very important for the consumers to get that benefit for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's also the way the other industries are getting more traction. So for example, the renewable energy industry, the reason why they're being adopted is because it's cheaper, not necessarily because it's sustainable. So in the same manner, for personal care, like we want to create like a high quality, less white cast physical sunscreen, or for our shampoo bars, like very cleaning but not drying and still moisturizing experience, wherein the consumers will really love it. This, even if it's with the sustainability as a bonus benefit.
Good. So this is a great subject, and you've raised the green flag on a subject that is very close to my heart, which is that this is not about costing, charging more to get good. It's about being competitive. And as you said, that solar energy is now cheaper than other sources, and we need to keep on banging that drum. So can I ask you about the pricing of, and it's good to be talking about your shampoo too, because it's a critical story. and your sunscreen versus, you know, the brands that it may be L'Oreal brands or local brands. So where do you sit on the pricing and can you be competitive?
Right. As of now, because we're still starting, so we still can't afford to do the mass product or mass pricing.
Yeah.
But we want to keep it as competitive as possible. So, and in fact, our shampoo, although it's quite expensive compared to the shampoo in a bottle per product, but the per wash, it's actually cheaper because each shampoo bar is 80 washes per bar. But of course, like every time you purchase the product, it's still more hefty in terms of the price compared to the other regular liquid in a plastic bottle.
But this is super important because actually, as a consumer, we are only interested in the cost per application in theory. You know, that's actually the important mass. Because
that's true.
So, and I had a hunch that because of the density of a bar, by the nature of making it big enough so it's visible and isn't just a very small bar, which, you know, you probably have found you're having to give more product and therefore more washes per product you sell so that it's, you know, a visible bar. How well are you able to really shout out that this is, you know, this is the cost per wash compared to a normal shampoo as a big part of your justification or story as a manufacturer?
You know, that's a very interesting point because it's also a big learning for us.
Yeah.
Just last year, we got into one of the bigger pharmacies in the Philippines, Watson's. And of course, like, it's a privilege to be there because we're making sustainable products or sustainable alternatives more accessible to people. And we find that in our market research, because it's smaller, they find that it's more expensive because you just compare the small size with a big bottle.
Yeah.
And so now we have shifted our messaging. So now we have in our shopper marketing, like some wobblers and some point of sale materials that say how it's actually worth 2 months in terms of hair wash.
Yeah.
Or it's worth three plastic bottles. So we're A/B testing also like a value angle, because at the end of the day, to your point, like the costing is very important as a consideration for the consumer.
Now, I mean, sorry, it's not to have in this podcast to teach you how to do this, but I'm interested in this because how we get people to adopt products. I mean, I would be extremely happy to adopt a shampoo, particularly because I've seen you're in cardboard versus plastic, and also because I can probably travel with it without worrying about all the issues of the travel. But I think right on the front of the pack is almost part of the story. I could expect you to say, you know, 100 washes versus, you know, 5 for a bottle, or 100 washes equals 10 bottles. And you see it on the literal packaging so that every time somebody picks it up, that may be part of your, you know, your story. And it's part of your shout campaign in a way. But I'm not here to tell you how to do that. But it is interesting because consumers are going to have to change their perception of what value looks like, particularly if you're delivering actually better value, but they need to be able to process that in their heads and see it very visibly, I think. So maybe interesting for you to A/B test something as aggressive as that, because I think it may
That's be, a good point. Yeah.
Maybe worth it, you know, just to see, because one has to, I think we have to hit ourselves, including me. You know, I don't claim to be by any means whiter than white, but what I know is I've got to see things clearly and in a surprising, in your face way, as you know, marketing has to be, and to reconsider, because I'd already been very converted to your shampoo in the box, just looking at it because it looks so good and it sounds so sensible, and the washing gesture, as you said so beautifully, as long as it lathers well, which is what people want, and delivers the wash and experience, then there's no reason why you can't win with that big time. So I congratulate you on that. And then where does it come on the sun care? Because that still isn't a tube. What's the value comparison, do you feel, of your product versus another brand?
Right. So as of now, we're continuously optimizing and reformulating.
Yeah.
And right now we're focused on, because the pain point of the consumers is the white cast.
Yes,
so physical sunscreen, mineral sunscreen, it's typically like the white cast is so stark.
Yes.
So the good thing is we got a grant from the Philippine government, and it's quite good because we're devoting 100% of the grant to R&D, because we know that, you know, we really need to have world-class product in order to convert consumers. and to reef-safe sunscreen. Like, it's not like they're sacrificing or feeling bad that they're using reef-safe sunscreen. So, you know, so we're actually addressing the white cast issue and also the how lightweight it is, because you should, that's another consideration for consumers. If it's very heavy or greasy, they don't like it. They want it lightweight. So I think at the end of the day, it's really going back to being consumer obsessed, which is what I learned back in advertising and marketing, and just applying it to this advocacy.
Right. Well, by the way, after this podcast, I'm going to give you some contacts, both in Thailand and America. In Thailand, it's one of the most advanced R&D centers for sun care and skin care. In America, there's a gentleman who's created a website like a Facebook for sustainable businesses. And the idea is to connect people to solutions. And therefore, you can find people around the world that might be solving or having ideas for you, which, as you said on your website, is not about creating nano zinc and titanium, which then in its own right is more invisible on the skin, but then goes and hurts the coral. So I'll give you that afterwards, because it would be brilliant if you can crack this problem.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And so how long, tell me, when did you actually start the company and how long has it been going?
So we launched it in 2018.
Gosh, yeah.
So it's quite baby. And we also had a big challenge during COVID because we actually started with a reef-safe sunscreen. So we're very much positioned for travel, like a travel personal care. And then COVID happened, didn't have sales for 6 months. But I think what's really good also is like how we're part of this impact community here in the Philippines. So there's so much support and there's a lot of like incubators that are just willing to give support to startups like us.
Great. That's right. And is this your sole job or are you doing this in parallel to another career at the same time?
Oh, right now, finally, this is my sole job.
Right.
So yeah, but we did start in 2016, like ideation stage with my corporate advertising work with my colleague. So we would have to sneak it in after work hours or during the weekends and work on Maguay.
Great. Now, just a couple of last questions to finish. I would love to know the advice you'd give other young people or other people who are thinking about, you know, creating the solutions to solve the problems of our planet and particularly around product. What have you learned over these years, both a couple of things that went well, but perhaps a couple of things that have surprised and outside of COVID, that, you know, somebody would benefit from hearing from you if they were planning on doing something such as yourself?
Okay, I think one thing that I really learned is how I or you could maximize your own expertise or strength. So for example, like we decided to start reef-safe sunscreen business without any expertise on product formulation or chemistry, and we only had our marketing chops. And I think that's fine. We're not scientists, but we could get someone on the team to help us out. And maybe other people, they're better in like creating social media. And maybe that could also be a channel in creating education for sustainability, or maybe the others would be like really more hardcore science. So that's their contribution. So it's really being maximizing what you already know and applying it to your passion on sustainability.
Fantastic. And to finish, let's say I was able to give you some sort of magic wand let's call it a wand. And looking forward in terms of both what you're trying to do with the business, but the business in the context of sustainability, you know, what is the thing that would be transformative for you that if you could unlock or just whisk away, you know, that would take you to where you want to go with the business and saving the planet? You know?
I think if I had a magic wand and I can wave it and wish, I'd wish that we'd have better leaders that truly care for the people and for the planet. Because if they create these policies, I think the rest will follow. And yeah.
Well, you know, I'm in exactly the same place as you. I've identified that there are probably 8, but you know, there's probably 100 men mainly and a couple of women who are determining the future of the 8 billion people on the planet. And basically it is the leaders and presidents and of the countries around the world who are in essence doing nothing, you know, to the level we need. And our lives and the planet is in the hands of these people. And until we have a leader who steps up and becomes a leader and acts as a leader on this subject and leads the world, unfortunately, it's going to be down to, you know, individuals and companies such as ourselves. And yeah, that's why I actually believe it's companies that are probably going to solve the problem, not leaders, unfortunately. Maybe what you feel too.
Yes, for sure. I think for sure there are a lot of puzzle pieces. And one part is us. And I think that it's even more needed in the Philippines. That's why we feel like compensating for that. So yeah, but I think if we work together, like the leaders and also the businesses, I think it'll be a lot easier.
Me too. Well, look, thank you so much. It's been a really inspiring interview, and I'm totally inspired by what you've achieved.
Thank you so much.